Luke chapter 22, verses 31 through 34. Simon, Simon, Satan has asked to sift all of you as wheat. But I have prayed for you, Simon, that your faith may not fail. And when you have turned back, strengthen your brothers. But he replied, Lord, I'm ready to go with you to prison and to death. But Jesus answered, I tell you, Peter, before the rooster crows today, you will deny me three times. You'll deny three times that you know me.
Father, I pray that you would take your word as we've read it now and you'd apply it to our hearts today. Show us something maybe we haven't seen. Definitely, Lord, I pray you would show us how to follow you more, better, as we walk out of this place today through your word, we ask. In Jesus' name, amen. Man, you may all be seated. I don't know if you've noticed that there are these things called memes. Have you heard of them? There are pictures online that kind of represent ideas or stories. And I saw one like of a parent. They wanted to make a cake for their kid, and their kid wanted, you know, a specialized kind of cake that looked like a character from, you know, something they loved. And like, you know, the parent looked it up, found a recipe or found a box that had the kit for everything. And they had the picture on the outside of the box, so they had their expectation set, and then they made it, and the reality was this. You know, and then another one, the expectation, the reality. The expectation, the reality. The expectation, the reality. The expectation, the reality. When our expectations don't match reality, we have a choice to make. We can either turn our back on our expectations, or we can turn our backs on reality. What happens when our expectations of Jesus don't match up with the reality of who Jesus is? What happens when our expectations of what Jesus is like and what he's supposed to do and what he's going to do in our lives don't match up with the reality of what Jesus is doing in this world and in our lives? When our expectations with Jesus don't line up with the reality of who he is, someone is going to get denied. And that's what we just read with Peter. And that's what we see happen with him and the other disciples. And listen, if it could happen to them, it could happen to me, it could happen to you. We could get confused between our expectations of Jesus and the reality of who Jesus is. And it could cause us to not really see Jesus truly for who he is and what he's doing. And so if it happened to them, it can happen to me. And I want to learn a lesson. So we're going to learn a lesson today from Peter in particular. We're going to look at his life. So we're going to pick it back up where we left off last week. We've been looking at the story for the last couple weeks of Jesus at the Last Supper he's having with his disciples. They're in that, you know, upstairs room together. And we saw how, you know, they started to eat. And Jesus told them, look, guys, I'm going to die. And one of you is going to betray me. And somehow that turned into an argument about which one of them was the best. They were all fighting with each other about which one of them was the best. And Jesus cut that off. And then here's the next thing Jesus said in that night. He turned to Peter and he said these words that Craig just read. He said, Simon, Simon, which was Peter's original name. Simon, Simon, Satan has asked to sift all of you like wheat. But I've prayed for you that your faith wouldn't fail, and that when you turn back, you'll strengthen your brothers. We don't sift things. Maybe some of you bake a lot. You try and make cakes like that. And maybe you know you sift flour, but most of us don't sift anything. But the way they would sift grain, they would take wheat, and there's the husk, you know what that's like, around the wheat, and then there's the stuff you want, right? So they would create these little thatch things. We would use a metal thing today, but they made it out of thatch and wove it together. And they would drop all the wheat in there, and they would shake it and shake it and shake it until the good stuff went to the middle, and all the garbage, all the bad stuff, all the husks went to the outside. And so what Satan wants to do is he wants to shake these guys. He wants to shake all of Jesus' closest friends, the disciples. He wants to shake them because he's convinced there's not a good piece of food in the bunch of them. They're all just a bunch of husks, and none of them are going to actually stand and be able to withstand the shaking. And that's what he wants to do. He wants to shake them. And Jesus tells Peter what? He says, I've prayed for you that your faith won't fail. Now, I don't know about you. When I first read that, I'm like, okay, why didn't Jesus just say no? Say no. No, you can't shake them. Leave them alone. Right? Just let them be. Why didn't Jesus say no? Is there maybe some purpose in the sifting and the shaking? Either way, Peter doesn't want to hear it. So Peter responds, says, Lord, listen, I'm ready to go with you all the way to prison, even to death. That's what he says. And again, I sat back and I said, okay, I want to understand what are Peter's expectations here? Because there's crazy stuff's about to happen with Peter. And obviously his expectations of Jesus are out of whack. But here he is saying, I'm ready to go with you, Jesus, to prison and even to death. So it sounds like, you know, his expectations are aligned with where Jesus is headed. But then I think more about Peter's story. And I hear him saying that, but I remember that just a little while before this, Jesus had said another time that he was going to die. And Peter grabbed Jesus by the arm, pulled him aside and said, listen, stop talking like that. That's not going to happen to you. There was no way in Peter's mind he could conceive of a situation where God would allow Jesus to be killed. Jesus was perfect. He was pure. He was righteous. He was good. He was loving. Look what he was doing for all the people. In Peter's mind, the people who died, the people who suffer the way you're talking about, Jesus, those are the bad people, not the good people. So he actually had pulled Jesus aside and yelled at him for talking about how he was going to go die. So what does that tell you about Peter's expectations? Jesus' death is not among his real expectations. And then I thought about, you know what, it's funny that just a minute ago in this room, they were all fighting about which one of them would be in what place when Jesus took over and established his own kingdom. And guys who are fighting over, like, who's going to have what office, who's going to have what place, and they're measuring the windows for drapes, they're not thinking about, oh, we're going to go die. They're thinking about victory and vindication. That's what they're thinking about. That's Peter's real expectation. Beneath all the bluster and all the words, Peter's real expectation is that they're going to go and win, and there's no way that God would allow Jesus to die because Jesus is the Messiah. He's the King. He's here to rule and reign and take over, and so it just does not fit in his mind. This could not be what's going to happen. His expectation is victory for us all, and then being on top. And then Jesus smacks him with reality and says, I'm telling you, Peter, before sunrise tomorrow, basically says, you're going to deny that you know me three times. What must that have felt like? Can you imagine what that felt like? I mean, I feel like I have a little taste of what that feels like, that, you know, when your expectation comes face to face with reality. Like a year ago, last week, is when we started to go to online services. I remember all this whole thing. There was a pandemic that's still going on. But, you know, we thought, okay, we'll have to take a break for a few weeks from meeting together. And we started to get creative. And then at some point we realized, oh, this is going to be a long time. And me and a lot of you too started thinking, okay, life's going to be a little different. This is going to be a good opportunity to learn how to eat well and exercise so that whenever we come out of this thing, I am going to be back to being fit and in shape and eating right. And that was my expectation. And then here's the reality today. It's painful when the expectation doesn't line up with reality. It can be depressing when the expectation doesn't line up with reality. Can you imagine how Peter feels when Jesus smacks him with this dose of reality? He thinks he's going to stand strong and march with Jesus to victory. And that's not the reality Jesus is headed toward. And when Peter is confronted with the clash between his expectations and reality, it's going to break him. So let's fast forward. Fast forward to the garden. They're all there, and Jesus has them praying with him. And then the chief priests and the elders and the temple guard all show up to arrest Jesus. And Peter, true to his word, he stands up, pulls out a sword, and swings at one of their heads. And he hits one of them right in the ear, which I don't know if that's a good shot or a bad shot, but he cuts the guy's ear off. And Jesus doesn't say, nice shot, Peter. He says, stop. None of this. This is not what we're doing. And then Peter's left wondering, what in the world? What? What? Why? And he watches Jesus heal the guy's ear and put it back together. And Peter is just stunned to see this. And he had acted with bravery and courage, and he put himself out there, and Jesus stepped in and rebuked him for it. Why? Why? I don't know about you, but I could just feel Peter's confusion. Sometimes we don't stop to really identify with someone like Peter. He's just, big talker. He's really a big chicken. No, he's not a big chicken. He just started the fight. He was ready to go. So then I step back and say, okay, how must he feel? Because he thought he was doing what was expected. He thought he was living up to his expectations for Jesus, but those weren't the reality. That wasn't the reality Jesus was headed toward. And so Peter must have been just so incredibly and painfully confused and anxious, because robbed of his expectations, all he had left in that moment was the reality of what Jesus was actually doing. And Peter was confused. And this is the sifting. This is what sifting is. Peter and all the others, they're being shaken in this moment. Shaken, 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 because their expectations are clashing with reality. And someone's going to get denied, and they can just feel the shaking going on. And you all know the story of Peter. You know how they all, they all led Jesus away back into town to interrogate him and try him. Peter and the others took off running. Again, a sign that maybe they were ready to fight, but they weren't ready to die or go to jail, really. But then Peter kind of followed from a distance, and then he sneaked into the courtyard of the place where they were going to interrogate Jesus. And you remember what happened, right? He's standing there, and this woman says, hey, you're one of them. And I read through this again, and I read Peter's reply. He said, I don't know him. And I thought to myself, wow. The more I thought, the more I came to believe that Peter was unwittingly telling the truth in that moment. He didn't know Jesus. In the midst of his denial about knowing Jesus, he's actually confessing the truth. He doesn't really know Jesus. All he knew was his expectations of Jesus and what he thought Jesus was supposed to be like and do. He didn't really know Jesus. And if there is something good, or maybe good's not the word, maybe useful's the word, that can come out of you and I going through sifting, the clash of expectations and reality, it is that sifting brings us to the place where our expectations of Jesus that we've built from whatever confront the reality of who Jesus is and what he's doing. And it leaves us in a place where we have to choose to either deny our expectations or to deny Jesus. Because when my expectations of Jesus don't line up with the reality of who he is, someone is going to get denied. Peter denied Jesus. 3 times he denied Jesus. And then he slinked away out of that courtyard into the shadows. And he wept. Can you just feel that feeling? And some of you have been there. Some of you have been there in the sifting. When your expectations for Jesus and the reality of Jesus clash, and you're just not sure, and you can identify right now with what Peter's feeling. Maybe you're there right now. This is the sifting. I couldn't help, as I was reading Peter's story, to think about what we were reading. Many of us were reading, those of you who are in life groups, just a week or so ago, we were reading through the book of Job. And I could not get Job out of my head as I was reading Peter's story, because I think Job's story parallels Peter's story. And there's connection here that I think maybe can help us understand Peter's story. Some of you know the story of Job, some of you may not. So let me just kind of summarize it, really condensed version. We're told, there's a book called Job in the Bible, for those of you who don't know that. And we're told right at the beginning that Job is righteous. God looks at him and says, that dude, he is good, he is right, he's perfect. There ain't nothing wrong with that guy. He's with me. And he's really good and righteous. And Satan steps in and says, well, let me sift him. Let me sift him. And let's see the truth. And God agrees and lets Job get sifted. And within one day, Job loses all of his children, all of his possessions, all of his wealth, everything, even his health. He's just left there with like open sores all over his body. The only thing left to him is his wife, who's given up on him. So it's like, well, why don't you take her too, God? And his friends who don't believe in him, so it's like, well, why don't you take them too, God? But no, he gets to have them with him, But he is being in the midst of, he's being sifted. And what we learn is you read through the book of Job, and a lot of people don't quite get it and don't understand it, but there's all these different arguments as he and his friends try and figure out God. And because what they think that God is just and God operates the world on justice, and that means everything's going to make sense. Good people get blessed, bad people get cursed, and it just should be really clear and obvious. That's their perspective on justice and what it's supposed to be like. And so Peter's the same way. Peter's looking at the world, and he's saying, this should all make sense. And what would make sense right now is not that Jesus would get arrested and beaten and crucified and killed. What would make sense is that we would storm in and take over everything because he's the Messiah. That would make sense because that would fit with God's justice. Those who are good and pure get blessed. They win. They succeed. They don't suffer and get crucified and die. So Peter and Job are parallel with each other here. And Job, he sits there saying, I've done nothing wrong, but I'm suffering horribly. So he starts to wonder, is God unjust? Or does God not care about justice in this world, and that's not how he's running things? So Job is confused the same way Peter was confused, and he cries out to God, and he demands an explanation. He said, if you're just and this world is supposed to be just, then why am I suffering? It doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't equate. I don't get it. Why is the reality different from my expectations? Explain yourself, God. And God actually shows up. God actually appears. And Job sees him. And God speaks with Job. And in the course of their conversation, what God exposes is this, is that Job and you and me, we don't have the capacity to understand justice truly. Justice is not simple. Anybody who pretends this world is simple is confused. It is difficult. Reality is difficult and confusing. And we don't have the capacity to recognize and really understand justice, not from God's perspective, and we don't have the capacity to see what God is doing and make sense of it. It's not like God could just explain it to you and me, and we're like, okay, I get that. Yeah, it makes sense to me. Okay, God, keep doing what you're doing. You got my thumbs up on it. No, God says, look, where were you when all this was created? Where were you when these things were formed and made? Who are you? Are you the one who holds these things together? Do you really think you can comprehend all of this? And the truth is, no, we can't. But God doesn't rebuke Job for asking the question. He doesn't rebuke Job for being anxious about it. Instead, what he does is he said, you can understand it, but you can understand this, that I am just and I love you, and trust me. I'm asking you to trust me. And after his encounter with God, after Job sees God, he says this. And this to me is the key. So if you haven't listened to anything else, listen to this. Listen to what Job says. Job 42, 5 and 6. He says, I had only heard about you before, God, but now I've seen you with my own eyes. I take back everything I said, and I sit in dust and ashes to show my repentance. In other words, Job is saying, you know, when I started, I thought I knew you, God, but really I only had heard about you. I only knew of you. I didn't know you. And now I've gone through this sifting and I've been utterly confused and shaken, left to the point where I felt like I had to either deny you, God, or I had to deny me. And neither one felt right. Neither one felt good. But now I've seen you, Lord. And now I understand that I don't understand everything, and that's okay. I can just trust you. But the pivot in Job is that he saw God. He saw God, and that changed everything, because now knowing who God is and what God is like and seeing this big picture of it all, he's able to say, you know what? I could not handle that. I can't figure out justice. I'm not going to try to figure out justice in this world. I'm going to trust you, God, because it's a job beyond me. I'm going to just... Basically, he says, I'm going to sit here and shut up. And sometimes that would be a really good thing for us to do. But again, remember, God never rebukes him for asking the questions or for going through the struggle. But in the end, God calls on him to trust him. And that's with Peter. The same is true. He expects God to act with justice in this moment, to just do what makes sense. And when that's not happening, Peter is confused. And for Peter, the pivot point is drawn out. For Job, you know, he has this confrontation with God and he's like, okay, I see now. But Peter started the same way. He was kind of just fat and happy following Jesus, but he didn't really know Jesus. His whole life following those 3 years together, he was confused about who Jesus really was. And then this sifting came and it made it clear that his expectations of Jesus didn't match up with the reality of Jesus. And Peter was stuck in that moment and he ended up denying Jesus. But then, the moment Peter denied Jesus the third time, do you remember what happened? He looked up and he saw Jesus up there and they locked eyes. And Jesus didn't go, But Peter ran out and cried in guilt. And then he saw Jesus carrying the cross up the hill. And he saw Jesus getting nailed to that cross because of him. And he saw Jesus' dead body lowered from that cross. And this was the sifting. This was the sifting, and Peter's just there in silence, confused and not knowing what to do in the middle of this sifting with his expectations and the reality. But then he saw Jesus' empty tomb. And then he saw Jesus risen from the dead, standing there in the room with him where they were hiding. And then he saw Jesus on the beach. He had gone out fishing again. I don't know if they were just going back to their old jobs, but it feels that way. But at the end of the story, they're back out fishing, and he sees Jesus on the beach, but he doesn't know it's Jesus. And Jesus says, hey, guys, you got any fish? And like, no. All night, nothing. Everything's going wrong for me right now. He's like, well, why don't you try the other side of the boat? Like, really? Fine. And you all know what happens. They throw the net down. They get a ton of fish. It reminds them, oh, that's what Jesus did when we first met him. And Peter realizes it's Jesus. He dives out of the boat. He swims to the shore. A little while later, they're sitting around a fire. And they're eating the fish. And Jesus looks Peter in the eye and says, Simon, do you love me? Do you love me more than these? Almost like reminding you, remember how when you knuckleheads were fighting over who was the greatest that night? Do you love me more than these? And Peter doesn't take that bait. He's like, no, you know I love you, what he says. I'm done with that stuff. You know I love you. 3 times, Jesus asks him the question, do you love me? Each time he says yes, and each time Jesus says, okay, then take care of them. Feed my sheep. Take care of your brothers. In that moment, when Peter sees Jesus risen from the dead, and Jesus restores him back, walks him back through every one of those denials, we see Jesus' prayer come true. We see Jesus' prayer become reality, because what did Jesus say in the beginning here? Satan wants to sift you. Your expectations and the reality are going to clash. But I have prayed for you that your faith won't fail. And in the end, that you'll turn around and encourage your brothers. And that's what happens in the end. Because Peter's faith doesn't fail. He turns back to Jesus and is restored. And look, I don't think it's a stretch to say that Jesus is saying a similar prayer for you and for me. That as you and I go through siftings and we come to places where there's conflict between our expectations for Jesus and the reality of what Jesus is doing, what we want him to do in our lives and what he is doing in our lives, the reality of what he calls us to be versus our expectation of what we really want to be, those are hard moments, but Jesus is praying that we won't deny him, that we'll pass through those moments, denying our expectations and ourselves, and come out on the other side able to encourage one another. What are your expectations? What are your expectations for Jesus? And how might they be keeping you from seeing who he really is? Now, I just want to take a couple minutes and talk about this on 2 levels. I want to talk about the big picture level, about something I see happening in our culture in particular, and then the individual level, our personal level. So on the big picture level, There's something I've seen happening among the church, and honestly, it's been happening kind of from the beginning. But I'm seeing a particular way it's happening and a challenge that you and I face. Even if you and I don't give in to this, the people around you who are Christians and those who aren't, they see it happening in our nation, and they're going to get drawn into it. Or they see it, and they're like, what is up with that? And it's this mentality within Christianity in this nation that we're supposed to conquer and dominate and be on top. That we're supposed to go out, and there are people who talk this way, and dominate these areas of culture and get on top of, you know, media and get on top of news and get on top of education and get on top of politics and get on top of entertainment and all these things. And if we can get Christians on top of them, then we can make them behave in godly ways and restrain sin. This is the way the Pharisees were acting, by the way. This is their agenda. Back in Jesus' day, if we could just get everybody to just do what we're telling them to do and restrain sin, then God can do what he's supposed to do, what he wants to do. It's the us versus them mentality that's also just so poison in this. There's an us against them mentality that's rising up in our culture and in our world. And it's been there at other times, but it's there now, and us against them. And so there's particular groups that you feel like you got to fight against, and Christians are being lumped into, and in particular, evangelical Christianity is being lumped into this thing. That's, oh, they feel like every other interest group that's just trying to grab for power, and they're approaching it with the same us against them mentality. Peter and the other disciples had an us against them mentality. In that room that night, they were like, hey, dude, we got a couple swords. Let's go to it. Let's get it done. They had an us against them mentality. They were ready for it. What they weren't ready for was the reality. The reality Jesus showed them was it's not an us against them. It's us for them. And there's a huge difference there. There's a huge difference between us against them and us for them. They weren't ready for Jesus laying down this path of sacrificial love, not to try to restrain sin, but to obliterate it by exposing it for the sickness that it is through not dominion and conquering of people, but through sacrificial loving, giving of oneself, grace and mercy. And so what we're called to be is people who follow Jesus' path of us laying down our lives for them. And that doesn't mean that we just say, oh yeah, everything's fine, everything's good. We confront sin in our own lives first and in our world. We call it what it is. That's certainly what Jesus did. But Jesus wasn't acting to try and suppress sin and hold it back. He was acting to expose it for the lie it is, for the disease that it is, and the sickness it is. And you don't do that by dominating. You do that by sacrificing yourself. You do that by loving people and sacrificing yourself to demonstrate to them a love that offers and extends transformation and forgiveness and a reality that only Jesus can offer. And that's not a compromise. That's not a, oh, you know, everything's fine, I'll pat you on the back. We can penetrate every aspect of our culture with this loving sacrifice approach, with this us for them approach, as opposed to this us against them approach. And we have got to, if we're going to be the church that honors Jesus, the reality of Jesus' path, we've got to learn how to do that and what that means. And we've got to reject anything other than that. Even though it's so tempting. Look, I would love it if everyone just behaved the way I think they should behave. I would love if everyone just accommodated what I think they ought to do and be. That would make my life just, oh, so much better, so much more comfortable. But that's not why we're here. That's not why the church is here. The church isn't here to beat people into submission to Jesus. It's here to lead people into submission to Jesus. And that is done by following Jesus' path. Sacrificial, selfless, loving, giving grace. We've got to find a way to do that. Here's the small picture of it. Small picture of it. Now let's focus on you. Let's focus on me. Where are your expectations of Jesus and for Jesus maybe misaligned? You know, a lot of times we talk about Jesus as he's there for me when I need him, when I'm going through a hard time. He helps me. You know, you got the wrong expectations of Jesus. Sometimes we're expecting Jesus to, you know, follow us and do the things we want him to do. Then we hit trouble and we get confused. But we'd rather serve a Jesus who meets my needs without demanding anything from me. We'd rather serve a Jesus or embrace a Jesus who helps me become the best me I can be, as opposed to me being transformed to become like him. The reality of his sacrificial, gracious love and service. Some of you, some of us, maybe you're in that sifting moment right now. Maybe, like Peter, you started this out and you're like, let's go. I'm ready, Jesus. I'm going to follow you to whatever, to pain, to death, to sickness. I'm in it. I'm with you. And really what you were expecting was, I'm going to commit to this because it's going to make a beautiful cake out of my life. My life is going to be cake. And yeah, it might be difficult. I might have some trouble doing it, you know, but through it all, I know it's going to turn out and it's going to be a beautiful cake here and now. And now you've hit the sifting. Maybe it's because you've grown up enough to know that life doesn't quite work that way. Or maybe you're just in the middle of pain or in the middle of a confrontation of reality and expectations, and you're realizing the cake is a mess, that it looks nasty and disgusting, and you're like, this isn't what I signed up for. This wasn't my expectation. I know I said death in jail, but whatever. I was expecting that, you know, we'd at least be a little bit nicer. Here's what Jesus is doing. He's praying that you and I won't fail. When we're in this sifting, when our expectations and the reality conflict, who are you going to deny? Are you scared to deny yourself? Are you worried about what that might mean or what that might cost? That would make sense if you were. I am oftentimes scared of what that means and what it might cost. Are there big changes I need to make, big choices I need to make, Jesus? Because you're asking me to deny myself, deny an agenda that I've been following, thinking it was you. Now you're sifting me and showing me. Here's all I can show you. If you're scared to deny yourself, worried about what you might lose, let me just offer you what Jesus himself said. He said, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross daily and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will save it. Now, losing your life is a daily proposition. But finding new life in Jesus is a daily and an eternal proposition. Listen to me. When you deny yourself, you find life beyond your expectations. That's what Peter learned. That's what Job learned. That's what Jesus has taught us. When our expectations don't line up with Jesus, someone's going to get denied. If you deny yourself, you'll find a life that's beyond your expectations. This is what the Apostle Paul wrote about in 1 Corinthians, one of his letters to Christians who were struggling with, you know, suffering for Jesus. And he actually is quoting from a prophet, Isaiah, from thousands of years before him. So this is not a new idea. Here's the truth. 1 Corinthians says, no idea, no eye has seen, no ear has heard, no mind has imagined what God has prepared for those who love him. That's what Job learned. You cannot even imagine what God is doing and what God is preparing for those who will deny themselves and not him, who will follow him. Right? You can't imagine it. Peter learned that lesson. You can't go by what you're thinking, your expectations. You've got to just choose to trust him with your lives. But we have a great reason to trust him with our lives. We have a great reason to trust God more than we trust your parents, your siblings, for sure your siblings, your spouse, your closest friend. We have a great reason to trust God more than anybody else in this world. Jesus. Jesus shows us who God is. He shows us how much God loves. He shows us the reality that God is loving and gracious and sacrifices himself for you and for me. And so, yeah, I can trust him. I can trust him and say, yeah, there are things I don't understand. There are expectations I have that aren't being met. But life isn't about my expectations. It's about the reality. And I know I don't have enough perspective and point of view to see the full reality, the full picture. I see just little bits of it. But Jesus, I know you see it all. And I'm going to trust you because you died for me. Because it was my cross that you bore. Because it was my shame that you carried onto that tree. That caused you to shed your blood. And so, Jesus, I'm going to trust you because you're the only one worthy of my trust. And I'm going to worship you for it. And I'm going to praise you for it and thank you for it. And I'm going to sing about how worthy you are. And I'm going to deny myself and I'm going to follow you, the reality of who you are.